At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to the 486th episode of the Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, the Sales Whisperer, your host, and you're in for it today. It's Sales Jiu-Jitsu, the secret black belt system for champion leaders. So we've got a black belt, Elliot Baiev, and Daniel Moskowitz. Daniel is a student of Elliot. They are both in sales, they're in marketing. And they are jiu-jitsu practitioners. So we got off track a little bit, but not too much because it's all relative. It really is. Jiu-jitsu is life. We get into how they met, how they came about combining the two, sales and jiu-jitsu. And this is the second of two episodes back to back. You know, Matthew Pollard's episode just went live yesterday. His book was just released yesterday. Elliot and Daniel are releasing their book today. So I try to help my friends promote their stuff when it's good. And these guys are good, so their book is available. They sent me a copy of it with a belt, a nice card. Very well done. These guys are cool people to know. But, you know, we get into, you know, old school selling. What does jiu-jitsu literally mean? Is sales a combat sport? An interesting phrase from judo. Some statistics around how to win in jiu-jitsu and in sales, of course. How to learn from your wins. Live training versus dead training. What type of sparring partners you should have. How to handle objections, how to prepare for them. So we get into quite a bit. So it's a good episode. It's a good book. So I will link to that at the end. And as always, if you need a good sparring partner for sales, hit me up, thesaleswhisperer.com. Train you one-on-one, train your team. I'm working with a new client now in the Tempe, Arizona area, doing a two-day on-site with them and then 90 days of support. That's quite common, actually. Usually what we do is 2 to 4 weeks ahead of time, then a 1 to 2 day intensive, and then 60 days post support to make sure the things we discussed and trained on and applied and taught are sticking, because you're not going to remember once, or you're not going to remember much from a one-time training. So I'm real big on the reinforcement side of things, just like jiu-jitsu. You know, we talk about, make jokes all the time that, oh, you've been watching YouTube videos. You know, I bet you're a black belt now. And the reality is you forget. Unless you practice it under pressure, it's not going to sink in. It's just not. So, you know, we always talk about rookies practice until they get something right. Professionals practice until they can't get it wrong. And it is. It's just time on the mat. Repetition, repetition, repetition. So who's going to push you to do that, right? That's what I do in the training. So it can help you and your team. You can come do it on demand through makeeverysale.com. You can do the small group, the weekly calls, and the implementors.com. So three different ways to get my training. So avail yourself of any or all of them, all right? Actually, you get membership in the implementors when we do the private or semi-private. It's a little bonus I throw in there. All right. So don't say I never gave you anything. So check those out. And now let's bring on our guest. Daniel Moskowitz, Elliot Baiev, all the way from Toronto. Welcome to the Sales Podcast. Gentlemen, how the heck are you?
Doing great. Thanks awesome. For having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man.
Well, if y'all have seen the Key and Peele, he says, you done messed up, A.A. Ron. Have y'all seen that one?
No.
You got to go. All right. You got to go watch it right after this.
Got some homework.
Do you know who they are, the comedians?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You got to go. Got to look up. You done messed up, A.A. Ron, because y'all done messed up. You wrote a book on jiu-jitsu, and you came on my show. So
order Uber Eats. This is probably going to go about 12 hours. You're going to need hydration. Ring a bell. Have somebody bring you some food and water, because this is never going to end. All right.
Excellent.
So y'all did. You wrote a book. Man, man. Sales Jiu-Jitsu, the secret black belt system for champion leaders. Amen. So we were talking already about 10 minutes before we hit record. So thanks for writing this book. I got a slide from my school. I literally took a picture like the first week I was there, and it talks about how it's hard and you got to stick with it. And you're not going to have a bad day or a month. You're going to have a bad year or two or several. Things won't click. It talks about you're very close and just put in more time on the mat. So how did this book come about? I think, Daniel, you were training with Elliot just coincidental. You start training, y'all start talking, and things evolved.
Well, I run a jiu-jitsu program for entrepreneurs called Mastermind BJJ.
Oh, nice. So
it's kind of like a private once a week thing we were doing. And Daniel came out to a few sessions. And as you know, I'd be teaching some lesson or piece of philosophy connected to a technique, you just see his eyes light up, his ears perk up, and sound as we would get to know each other, as we would do like a little brunch after training, and I'd hear about his sales philosophy, and there was just so much alignment.
Yeah, isn't there?
Yeah, it's all. I mean, for me, when I heard about it, I didn't know anything about martial arts at the time. I had just lost 102 pounds, and I was told by my doctors, like, you want to get back in touch with your new body, go pick up a martial art. I'm like, oh, the hitting and the striking didn't really appeal to me. And as I learned a little bit before I came out, it's like, oh man, you can win without ever hurting anybody. And that's the core of my sales philosophy. It's like, leave people better off than you found them, even the sales process. And so it just jived with me.
Right.
And, Elliot would teach something. I'd go, oh, wait a minute. That's how I teach objection handling. Or it just stacked. And one of those students said, you should write a book. And we kind of sort of laughed it off. But it happened too often that we just said, okay, we got to get together and make this thing happen. So,
right. Pay attention to the signs God gives you, huh?
Oh, 100%. It was 100%. And as it came together for us, it just became this system. It became a systematic approach to it. Because, you know, as Elliot, talks about, We as we put together the book, it became based on training for competition, and as we mapped that to a sales system, it just became this great synchronicity, and it really addressed some of the biggest complaints that I know of as a sales director and as a sales individual. Some of those is, like, as a manager, I always got frustrated when my team wasn't overcoming objections. Or they, you know, and then weren't closing, or weren't getting consistent results, you know, that we were dependable. And then as a sales professional myself, it's no matter what I did, I didn't get people engaged in what I knew was a great service or product for them, or I got objections I couldn't handle. And how do I get out of that? And if I had deals that I already made, then falling through on the back end. Like, these were some of the biggest things that, as I looked at the system that we created, it addressed.
Yeah, very cool. So, Elliot, it's interesting. I mean, because you're a full-time jiu-jitsu instructor, right? You own your own school, and mm-hmm. that's your jam, right? But mm-hmm. It's interesting. You also have your, I don't know if you want to call it a side hustle or complimentary, this mastermind is just for a business, right? You're just teaching sales and entrepreneurs. And it just so happens that you are in jiu-jitsu. I mean, how did that come about?
I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. I mean, I consider myself an entrepreneur, study business kind of on my own since, you know, for over 20 years and have a number of businesses. And, you know, you do jiu-jitsu, you know how powerful it is for teaching about life, about conflict, about success, strategy. And it just seemed like something that was so perfect for entrepreneurs. And I was connected to a number of entrepreneurs in the city. So just put it out to a few friends and came together and just there was such a happy marriage. It's just such a wonderful thing to, and then, so that got me, you know, I've always been someone who takes more of a philosophical approach to jiu-jitsu. You know, there's so much we can learn about everything from the mats. And those lessons just seem to gel. And so that was its own program. I've slowed down over the last, you know, obviously COVID's impacted the martial arts business in general. But we would run like retreats and have, again, this private training group. But through Daniel and I coming together, I put together basically a formula, as he was talking about. We use a jiu-jitsu competition as an analogy for a sales engagement. And I created the jiu-jitsu success formula, which is basically a four-phase process for prepping for and winning jiu-jitsu competitions. So those four phases are pre-fight, fight, winning, and post-fight. And the obvious analogy there is then it's pre-engagement is what pre-fight means. Actually fighting is the engagement itself, how you show up, how you, you know, open the client or the prospect rather. Winning is how you close, and then post-fight is what you learn, win or lose. And so, you know, I've been, on top of being a competitor for over 20 years, I've been coaching for more than 15. And so I've gotten to see what works, what doesn't, not only in an actual jiu-jitsu match, but in the preparation, in the strategy of how you approach things. And so taking these lessons, we've applied them to the sales context, and it just came together really beautifully.
Is sales a combat full contact sport?
Beautiful question. And this is actually a very common thing that those who don't know jiu-jitsu kind of get a little concerned by, because, you know, what we say in the book is it's only old school sales mindsets that are that bullish, like we're going to go beat the clients. It's the opposite. And, you know, yes, jiu-jitsu training can be hard and intense, but literally translated, jiu-jitsu means gentle art. And it is more about collaborating with your training partner, collaborating even with your opponent to achieve an ultimate outcome. So we say, you know, you're not fighting the prospect. You're fighting the forces that get in the way of them saying yes. Because if you are a high caliber salesperson, you're providing something that you know is going to benefit your clients. So anything that would get in the way of them saying yes is actually hurting them. And ultimately, jiu-jitsu, you know, not to get too philosophical, I feel like it's the art of really benefiting, you know, from judo, there's this idea of how two training partners are supposed to work together, even competitors, jita kyoi, you and I shining together. And it's that idea of mutual prosperity that my philosophy around jiu-jitsu, and I would say jiu-jitsu as an art, is really based on. So we take that philosophy, which was just so aligned with Daniel's sales. You know, we use the term black belt sales. As a black belt in sales, that's the philosophy that he really started with. And so it was just such a happy kind of connection there.
You know, there's an old saying in the military that no battle plan survives contact with the enemy.
Mm.
So why should I even plan? Can't I just jump out and wing it? I mean, I'm good with people. Mm-hmm. I'm funny. This training, planning, is it even necessary?
Well, it's the same thing in a jiu-jitsu context. Do I need to train? I know some moves. Can I just jump in? You can, and you will have some success. But this is not for the average person who just wants average results. This is for the already successful people who want a successful person who wants elite results. And if you want to be an elite competitor, you don't leave things to chance. You don't sometimes train. You have not only consistency in your training, you have a system of approaching. So, you know, in pre-fight, we talk about not only knowing the history of the art, some things have historically worked. So for those not familiar with jiu-jitsu, when you're on the bottom using your legs against the person, we call that the guard. And it turns out statistically in a competition, most people who pull guard win. So that's important knowledge of quote unquote the industry. But then there are also future trends, new things coming, new moves. If you're not studying those, you're going to be left behind. But then you might, at a tournament, you might see that a particular opponent likes a particular style of game. That's key data. So that's just one example, that those, that's kind of one element of the four phase process. But we can see how taking a more serious approach than just, oh, you know, I'm good with people, so I'm just going to go wing it. That's fine if those are the level of results you want. But if you want world-class results, you have to have a world-class system. And I think one thing that's not necessarily obvious until you really dig into the book or even just see the actual map is that it is a system. So what we do after a fight, and Daniel can speak to this more on the sales context, in a sales context, but what we do after a fight, win or lose, is a postmortem. What went well? And whatever we learned. So for example, just a quick example, I had a purple belt MMA fighter was fighting a local black belt. We have a lot of confidence in our guy, but we knew that if the black belt had a chance, it was probably going to be on the ground. So even though our guy's very strong on the ground, the idea was to avoid the ground altogether. He went in, won the fight in 2.5 minutes. It was very one-sided. It would have been very easy because it was such a simple win or a straightforward win to think, oh, there's nothing to learn here. But because we systematically analyze every fight, there was a moment where the black belt actually shot in for a takedown and got to his hips. My guy stopped it. But why did he get there in the first place? So by studying that, we saw something we could improve for the next fight. And the next fight, the guy never even got close. So what you learn in post-fight becomes your information for the next engagement, for your pre-fight phase, the next time you enter, you know, an engagement.
It's more recursive. It's very much about feeding on itself. I mean, until I learned this concept of winning, learning from your wins, I had sales reps that would one day they'd be killing it with the same niche, with the same kind of objections, the same product being sold. The next day they forgot what they did right. They would lose what they did right. And the discipline of reviewing their calls when they won increased their confidence levels, their mental game increased. They saw what they did right and they did more of it. And they closed more. When I took that lesson that he taught us and I brought it into the sales realm, and it increased conversion rates instantly increased in conversion rates.
Well, how do you evolve, right? Cause I asked this of a friend of mine, a black belt I train with, cause I, you know, before we hit record, you know, Elliot's asking me like what my game is, and I'm a big guy. So it's smash and pass, it's overpower, you know, dump them over, boom, and grind away. And I felt like I was kind of stagnating. And I asked a buddy of mine, you know, I said, do you just stick with what you know, or how often do you change things up and mix them up? And he was very adamant about do what works, right? If you got to move, do what works. But I mean, we do have to grow. I can't do just one move forever. And now, cause we train in the same school, everybody knows each other's game, that move is not as effective against folks that I've trained with for a year. So how do you balance do what works versus when you know it's time to sprinkle something new in?
One of the things go ahead,
Danny. No, go ahead.
I'm just going to randomly mute y'all and then I can hear.
So one of the things that I brought back to my team was the idea of live training versus dead training. Mm. So one of the things that happened was I found that my team did really great with pre-scripted objections. Like they could nail it. It sounded great, sounded good. But the second they got into a live environment, they tried that same move again and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So what I instigated was a mandatory sparring partners, and they rotate every week. And the idea is that they embody somebody they could not overcome. They become that person for their sparring partner. And it becomes live resistance training in the moment where they can feel what it would be like for somebody else to overcome that objection. And it makes them grow. It makes them understand, oh, I didn't think of coming at it that way. Ooh, that's a great question to ask. And then because it's a system, we have ways, we have tools in the book that we have for everybody that allows you to document those sessions and then populate different databases on the outcomes of that objection database. Now everyone can see how others have done that. And other niche specific databases on, oh, this specific niche, this specific type of approach may work well. So the growth happens because you're forcing the conversation to happen between reps with live real training, and they see the need to evolve and get and then bring in new moves.
But you know, Daniel, you know, salespeople hate role playing.
That's why this is different.
How do you get them to buy in?
Because it's different. It's not typical role playing is like, here's your scenario, here's your thing, go be that person. No, this is something they got pissed off about that week. This is somebody they couldn't overcome. It's like having a sparring partner in jiu-jitsu that you couldn't overcome. You're like, oh, I wish I just, oh, what could I have done differently? In this case, they have it real-time feedback every single week. And my guys love it. They love it. They look forward to their scheduled sessions. And they switch partners consistently. So they're not with the same people week after week. They actually really, really enjoy it. And it's a timed event. It's like a match. And they have to stick to that time container. They can't go over. And it's well positioned, and they have to document what happened. They love it. They love it. They love it. They love it because it's not that. Yeah.
Are they able to kind of coach each other through? Is it just a matter of once you have a baseline of knowledge, they can kind of coach each other to find the way?
Yeah. I mean, I think what happens is they'll spend 20 minutes on the clock. They'll schedule an hour for the first 20 minutes. They become their person they want the other person to show. They go through a 20 minutes of that person working the other person with a pitch and everything. And then they stop the clock wherever they're at in the conversation, and they tend 10 minutes to debrief on it. Okay, what did I see? What did you feel? But it's like, and they actually unpack it and then they document it. And then they spend 20 minutes for the other person. They roll reverse and they love it. They love it. They love it because it's real. It's not fictitious. It's not some made up scenario. And it's something that the other person couldn't overcome. And it's the learnings become easy to disseminate into the organization.
Yeah.
One of the ways to understand it, especially for those not familiar with jiu-jitsu, is a lot of martial arts have even the same exact same techniques as Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but it's the way they train that's so different, where, you know, maybe someone grabs you in this way and then you have maybe the exact same move, but by the time you do step one in other martial arts, the person's basically just waiting for you to finish. Whereas we know in jiu-jitsu, in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, by the time you do step one, the person's actually trying to stop you. And it's that genuine effort that's the reality of an intense situation, or that's what you're going to face in a real situation. Someone who's genuinely there. And that's why what Daniel's speaking about in a sales context, where, you know, dead role playing is kind of like those arts that just kind of have the right mechanism, but the wrong training method. But when you can actually genuinely challenge someone with something new, that forces them to grow. As for what you were asking about, like, how do you not stay stagnant? Well, a really important concept is the difference between like your A game and your B game. If the stakes are high, if it's a real engagement, you're going to use your best tools. But that's why in pre-fight, one of the subsections is training. And that's where you're going to be testing out new strategies. So we have a section that talks about game planning. You create a game plan of what's your ideal scenario going to look like. But that's just an idea. You have to go test that. You have to troubleshoot when things go wrong. And so again, that's why this whole system of how to approach this, you know, this will improve anyone who trains jiu-jitsu, but we apply it to the sales context because the parallels are just so, I think, pretty elegant. mm-hmm. and a parent.
Yeah. Well, definitely they are. And for 4 years now, I've been telling everybody, start rolling. We'll see how many listen. in my sales training, I've always told my people, you know, we have to adjust how we sell to match how the prospect buys. So like you were saying, those that pull guard statistically win more fights. What if a guy's got a really, I don't know, what if he's got a really good stand-up game? I
mean, beautiful.
Open, you know, maybe would you tempt him to pull guard?
Not at all.
Okay.
But you don't want him to be ignorant of that fact. So what he needs to do to make his game effective is, like you said, it's about adapting to the opponent, right? Or the client. So how does he adapt? Well, if he knows the person's going to try to get the bottom position, what we call pulling guard, then he has to make his takedown work before they do that. Or he has to, and as well, I should say, he has to make sure that if they successfully get to that bottom position, he's not caught off guard and very easy to sweep when that happens. So it's not that I try to, you know, force my competitors to play a certain way, but I don't want them to be ignorant of the rule set or what statistically happens or what's most high percentage. We want them to make their game work for the environment they're in.
Yeah. It makes me think of the cost of inaction. We talk about this in our fighting section on how to set up a win. And it's these little incremental elements that you can do in order to ensure that you meet them where they're at, but in a way that's respectful. If you understand, if you get the other party to tell you exactly, if they don't implement the problem or solution, listen, as black belt sales professionals, we get paid to solve problems. And if somebody can tell you, if you don't solve this problem for me, here is the cost of me not doing it, the cost of inaction. And what most people do, they ignore the cost of inaction or the state of the cost of inaction for a customer. What you should be doing is making the customer state the cost of inaction themselves, and you draw it out for them. Now they know the consequence of not engaging and what will actually happen if you don't engage with it, if you don't actually solve the problem. When they say that, it puts them into a position where you almost can't lose.
Yeah. But that does take some training, right?
Oh. Because,
you know, you get a guy like they come in and just bum rush, right? Like, I love big new white belts. You know, I'm finally at a point where I can handle them, right? This guy, it was maybe 3 weeks ago now. He's only been there a couple of months, but we have missed each other. And so I'm there and I get paired up with him. He's a big, strong guy. And this dude was like a primal guttural. He was grunting, rah, you know, just two hands on the collar, and ripping and pulling. And I'm just like, holy smokes, man. So I let him do his thing, right? I just pull guard. I'm hugging him. I look up, my professor's walking by. He's laughing. I'm laughing. And this guy's just pushing him. And I let him just get tired, right? 30 seconds, maybe. He's tired. All right, let's sweep. And I'm like we were saying before we hit record, I'm usually very chill. I don't submit people enough, right? I need to do more because usually I'll just work my position, transition. But this guy, it's like, I think I tapped him 5 times. I'm like, this dude needs to learn how to roll, right? But he came on like gangbusters and I let him kind of do his thing for a while. Do we need to let the prospect kind of do that? Let them feel like they're in control for a bit and then kind of come around, you know, instead of forcing our will. You know what I mean?
There's a few different ways to think about that. Is it that the prospect is the opponent you were referring to? Or is it that the mindset and the objections that they have in mind are very forceful? And so you might need to let those out and let them air them. so that you can adapt to them. You might need to better understand why they're so adamant that this is not, you know, this might not be an issue. And actually in the book, Daniel talks about when it's time to actually step away from an engagement. If there, say, just isn't a connection, we talk about in fighting, you know, how you connect with the opponent or the client, and only connecting on your terms. So maybe Daniel can speak more to that, but.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think in winning, we talk about reinforce and the idea of future casting. And sometimes when a prospect's coming on so strong and they're kind of doing their own thing, one of the things I love to pattern disrupt that. I mean, you still have to take control as a sales rep. I mean, you can't let you're never going to close a prospect who controls the conversation. It's not going to happen. But at some point, as you said, you got to turn the tide. And sometimes that's about painting the future, what it's going to look like with your product or service installed in their business. Like, what does that future look like? And can they share in that vision? Can they come around to that vision? And sometimes pattern disrupting them and just say, well, let's just think about this for a minute. If that problem was solved, this is what the future would look like for your company. Don't you want that? Wouldn't you want that? And it just disrupts their normal game or their habits that they default to. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're just trying to keep themselves safe. They're trying to keep themselves from, you know, they don't want to say that there's a problem. Nobody wants to say that they have a problem. Yeah. But you know, we need to get them out of that safety zone and get them disrupted a little bit.
Why do prospects take meetings and then bite the head off of the salesperson that is trying to help them?
I think it comes down to that. It comes to like the brain can't tell the difference between a saber-toothed tiger down the road or you just having a little bit of, you know, unease about something, you know. And I think some people fear, there's fear of change, there's fear of implementing something new. And also the accountability in organizations these days have gone up. When you say, yeah, we're gonna make this change, we're gonna put a stake in the ground, we're gonna invest in a solution, their jobs are on the line. And or they don't wanna take on the burden or the risk of trying to go get consensus. Consensus in organizations now is tedious. You have to get a lot of sign-offs for large investments from a lot of different parties. The bigger the organization, the more complicated there. And so I think, you know, they take meetings because they're intrigued. But to get them to take action, you need to pattern disrupt them. You need to get them into a spot where they are agreeing with you that the cost of inaction, that the future will be brighter, and that they agree. But I do. I took a call yesterday that someone bit my head off, you know, just because. But I'm like, but you booked it with me. I didn't book it with you. You booked it with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And their excuses are wide and variety, but I think it really does come down to being fearful mm-hmm. of change.
Yeah, and that fear can come from many places. It could be that they've had bad experiences with sales folk, right? So you think of, say, your white belt training partner. Maybe someone comes in for the first time and they've had bad experiences with, you know, even whether it be training or self-defense situations, they're naturally going to be tense. But, and we spoke a little before we got on this call about, you know, different ways of rolling, and it might take you rolling with them in a very relaxed way for them to ease up and for them to understand that you're not the kind of person, and this is not the kind of engagement where you're going to be trying to crush them. And that, you know, so much of what we communicate, our vibe really, tells the person who we are more than what we say. And that can sometimes, not always, but can often allow them to relax. And so it's really important that we're, as Daniel said, taking charge of the engagement by really controlling what we put out and not getting flustered by the energy someone else brings.
Sales as a service. Sales as a service. That's what I really think of it as. It's like we are providing, as sales professionals, sometimes we do get a lot of mud thrown at us that we're, you know, sales as a profession, like, oh, you've made us buy something we didn't need. But sales as a service. Sales is like, it's a noble profession that we help people solve problems. And When we solve those problems, companies can hire more people, keep more people, save more money, give out bigger bonuses, do amazing things in this world. We have a noble profession that I truly believe changes the world for the better. And we need to take on that mantle and really go out there and serve people.
When do you know it's time to force the issue versus go a different direction? Like one thing, like my professor, he is very good. Like he pulls guard, right? And he will grab your right arm and he will tug and tug and tug 3, 4, 5 times. Bam! Finally get that arm across your body. Then it's, you know, then it's lights out, right? He's going to take your back. He's going to armbar you. It's taken me a long time to realize, all right, that's like, put more effort into a move, even a repeated effort. Like I always think, oh, I tried one thing, it didn't work. I got to just totally change my game and go after something else. You know, so you know what I'm saying? Like when do you just keep pounding versus use that gentle art and use their weight against them and momentum and, you know, gently roll them over and kill them?
You know, there are three responses to conflict, and most people only ever learn two: fight or flight. But the third is what jiu-jitsu is all based on, planning ahead. So you need to be consistent and persistent with your efforts. You're trying an attack, doesn't work. Doesn't mean you have to move to something else right away. Maybe it means, okay, try it again. But if you just wait till you're in that moment to figure out what to do when that fails, you're already a step behind, because you're going to be then having to decide, do I go back to the same plan or do I give up and go somewhere else? So I'm actually working on a video right now called What Jiu-Jitsu Can Teach Us About Systems Thinking. And, you know, if you know, and this won't necessarily make sense to those listening who don't do jiu-jitsu, but if you know the Kimura guillotine hip bump combination, that's an example of a system. And what I like to do is plan my game plan in advance so that I go in and analyze, and this is what we get into in the training, your troubleshooting. What happens when I try this move? How can they stop me? Well, either they pull back or they drive forward. Okay, well, what can I do when they pull back? Ah, they leave this open. Okay, let me actually go and test my response to that. Let me go and train that. Ah, it's working. What happens when they push forward? Okay, what if I did this? Let's try it. We train it. It doesn't work. Okay, so we come up with something else. So for me, it's more about prepping ahead so that you have a system so that you're ready when they pull that arm back, so that your first attempt is not really your first attempt at that move, but your first attempt to get them to an algorithm, a system of responses that you're going to have. And they, you know, and I'm sure Daniel can speak to the sales side of that, but it's just, again, it's about prepping your, and actually Daniel has a great example of when he was pitching to a whole bunch of to a client, and then had to present to the leadership team, not knowing if some of the people that weren't in the first meeting would be there. Daniel, do you want to share that?
Yeah, piece? It's just preparation meets opportunity, and having a system in place that always allows you to be prepared with new tools that you can bring out. Because if you didn't know another move to counter that or another technique to bring in, you'd be lost. You'd be lost. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. We wrote the book together. I saw the opportunity to bring together an incredible system. What Elliot's referring to is the idea of, we talk about the hidden decision makers. So I've had a situation where I had a champion, and the champion was like gangbusters. We ended up creating a proposal that was around 6 figures. And I turned to him, I said, can you approve this? Like, can you actually approve this? He's like, no, that actually has to go to the full leadership team. I said, oh, okay. Can I go and present? Because I know if he presented it, it might not happen, but if I presented it, and we had already gone through, you know, quite a few meetings to get to the point of the proposal. And what he's talking about is I took the foresight of when I was practicing the pitch to my team. One of them said, well, how did you arrive at that solution, that suggestion? I said, oh my goodness, exactly. You would know that because you weren't in all the other meetings. So I hid the deck of the first meeting, of the presentation of the actual arrival of the solution, ready just in case that question came up. And lo and behold, it came up. I unhid that part of the deck, and I went through that for the to give them the not the high-level context, but the deeper context of why we came up with the solution. That never would have happened if I didn't train with my team ahead of time before going into the boardroom.
Yeah. And that takes discipline. I mean, it's not sexy, right? It's not fun. It's easy for people to push back, right? I mean, how do you get that consensus internally for your own team to go through that?
It's success. It comes down to, like, they love winning. You want to find people that love to win. And if they love to win, they will get the discipline to train. They'll get the discipline to use the system. And when they stop winning, you turn to them and say, did you use the system? They're like, no. I said, well, why do you think you lost? You didn't go back to the things that work. And it's that recursive nature of the system that gets the wins. And as you know, all sales reps are, like, the good ones are all A-type winners. They want to win. They're hungry to win. And if they see something that they do every day that gets them a win, like, I talk to my team about protecting their biology. Like, you're not going to win unless you go have a carb heavy lunch and you're trying to do sales calls in the afternoon and your brain's going all fuzzy. No, drink your water, eat healthy snacks, exercise, and be a good steward of your body so your mind can be sharp and be there. Well, when they start winning because of that, they do it more often. And yeah, we always have to train the basics. You know that. Like, you got to train the basics all the time with teams to keep them sharp. And I have a 6-month rotation where I go through all the basics again every 6 months with my team. We go through, you know, weekly training that we do. And on a 6-month rotation, we go back to the basics again, because sometimes they forget the basics and it slips. There's slippage all the time. But my biggest thing is when they win, they love winning and they know what they need to do to win.
Yeah.
It also comes back to you ultimately your why. And so the first section in pre-fight, we break every section or every phase into 3 subsections. First subsection is your inner game. And the first subsection of your inner game is your why. And if your why is actually compelling to you, if your reasons for wanting to win are actually compelling, you'll put in the work. If your why doesn't, it's same on the mats. If someone doesn't really care about winning a competition, they're not going to be putting in those hours of drilling. But if it really means a lot to them and they've identified that and articulated and put it on their wall and are reminding themselves of it every day, then all of a sudden those boring reps are not actually that boring, because they see the connection between what Daniel's talking about, the ultimate outcome, the success that they want, and the work that's going to lead there.
You know, a lot of times salespeople think their why is forced upon them, right? They're an employee, they got a quota, the boss is grinding on them. You know, do you have advice for those guys? I mean, I've worked for many companies that I ended up leaving, right? Because it was a grind. Some unrealistic quota is thrust upon me and I just have to suck it up. And I worked in telecom for years, and my manager, he said, he was told this years before that, was that they were told that basically 1 out of every 3 years is going to be good. That they're going to make big quotas. Basically, it's like they give you a huge number and you can't make it. And then so they give you a huge number the next year, but not quite as huge because they overdid it the first year. And then finally, on the third year, they wake up and like, we're grinding our people down. They give you an achievable quota. You hit it, you kill it. You know, you hit all your accelerators, you make great money. Then they, you know, they're back to slapping a huge quota on top of you. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm out of here. I'm not going to live in a world where I can win 33% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, but that is reality for a lot of people, a lot of companies. I mean, you have advice for people grinding through that?
Yeah. I mean, I have advice for managers. I mean, this is one of the reasons we both wrote the book. It's for sales leaders, you know, to be better people and better champions. There's actually nothing better than having a realistic quota. It actually will have your team psychologically be in a much safer place, and they will make more sales happen because of it. You can increase them over exponentially, but it's nothing like a sales rep selling, I'm going to nail 5 this week. and they actually nail five. Like, that's an incredible, if you're in that predictable scenario, there's nothing better than a psychological zone of like, I'm winning every week and hitting a quota that they can actually meet. I don't agree with hitting quotas that are just unrealistic. It does not serve the psychological component of your, and you know, sales is a mental game. It's like 90% mental. And if you can't be in a psychological zone of knowing that you're winning all the time, you're not going to be in that. The second part is, how do you get them connected to a why that's not just about their quotas? Well, for me, I look for people that are interested in winning for their families, interested in winning for, you know, they want to retire their mother, or they have something that's bigger than just them, that is a goal that they want to achieve. They want to do a trip to someplace, like whatever that is, it doesn't matter to me, but it's got to be something more than just, I want to hit quota, or I want to make this much money. Well, why? Why the money? What's the why behind that? And I get them to write that down and then share it with me. I want to dream with them a little bit about that. As a sales manager, I know that motivates them. I know what they're all about. I know what they're, I know why they show up to work every day and want to work really hard. And I got a guy on my team who's got twins. He just wants to make a better life for them. And that's a noble everyday thing. And that fuels them. That gives them fuel. And then I give them the opportunity to win all the time.
Yeah.
Another tool Daniel talks about is having a benchmark goal and a, what did you call it, Daniel?
Stretch goal. So we always talk about two different kinds of goals. The stretch goal is the one we're always trying to go, and we'll have a mass siesta together if we hit it. But the day-to-day goal is the budget goal. It's the benchmark. It's the goal that we have to hit to keep the lights on, that we have to hit in order to do it. And that's the one that we grind to, and we all agree on that we're going to make it happen. And the stretch one, we're still going after that. Like, we still want to make that stretch, but it's the gravy. It's the stuff where now the extra bonuses start to kick in. And that just keeps it safe. It keeps it safe.
Yeah. Very cool. I love it. Black. Awesome. Black cover, red and white font, kind of like a black belt, huh?
what a coincidence.
So the book is coming out right now, Sales Jiu-Jitsu, The Secret Black Belt System for Champion Leaders. You've got a link, correct? We can send people to?
We got some amazing bonus items for folks when you buy the book. It's only 99 cents this week. Like, this is our launch week. It's 99 cents for the ebook. It's a no-brainer, available on Amazon. But listen, if you go to pick up a copy, you go to salesjujitsubook.com, and we've put a special link /sales for you, for Sales Whisperer. And we wanted to, so it's sales, J-I-U-J-I-T-S-U book.com /sales. And we got a couple things. We have a little program. It's complimentary to you guys. It's the 4 steps to increasing your conversion rates in 30 days. And when you implement these things correctly, these steps, it's proven to increase your conversion rates by at least 10 to 20%. And we also have free resources with the book, almost every chapter, everything from our log book, our sparring training partner logs, our objection handling, how I review calls. It's all there. And again, just salesjujitsubook.com/sales. And it's all for you guys.
Very nice. I will promote it.
Appreciate it.
Lucky for you, I'm hungry, so I have to end this interview. Otherwise we would keep, I didn't plan ahead, man. I needed to have my food come in, and my wife, she just gave me that look. So I was like, okay, I can't push that. So, you know,
we'll just have to do it again.
She's the red belt, right, in this house.
boss.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thanks for carving out some time. The book is excellent. I recommend everybody get it and get into a good school as well. So thanks for coming to the show. Have a great day.
Yes. Thanks, man. Bye for now.
Test your new strategies in training. How many of you are doing that? When was the last time you did that in sales? Or in marketing? All right. This is not your typical role playing. It's a timed event. The cost of inaction. Oh, we get paid to solve problems. So good. Prospects fear change.
prospects become accountable for the changes they recommend. Just like jujitsu, right? Can I get you to attack? Can I bait you? And then use that energy, your weight, your own strength against you. So in sales, though, it's not adversarial, but the prospect quite often thinks it's adversarial. So we have to approach it that way. Okay, they're attacking because they don't know any different, because they've been abused. So we have to help them get over that. So we have to help them not fear change. We have to help them welcome the new roles, the new processes. It's a little sales jujitsu, all right? It's not easy. It can be done. It's amazing when it does happen. It's like voodoo. I tell people jujitsu is like voodoo. Knowing how to sell is like voodoo. All right? It's minimal energy, maximum rewards. That's how I've put food on the table since 1997. Got a family of 9 now. My wife stayed home for 25 years. So the food we eat, the colleges they attend, the cars we buy is based on my ability to sell. So I might know a thing or two about it. Okay. So if you need some help with that, hit me up. Saleswhisper.com. MakeEverySale.com. TheImplementors.com. Pick your poison and I will help you grow. I guarantee. Thanks for listening. I'll go sell something.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.